Welcome to Program Notes for your North Carolina Symphony, an exclusive production of the Triangle Radio Reading Service. I'm George Douglas. I'll be reading the program notes for all of the Classical Music Series concerts by the North Carolina Symphony for the 2019 season. The program notes I'm reading today are for the performance by the North Carolina Symphony at noon and 8 p.m. Friday, March 15th, and at 8 p.m. Saturday, March 16th, at Maymandy Concert Hall, Duke Energy Center for the Performing Arts in Raleigh. This concert will also be presented on Sunday, March 17th, at 7:30 p.m. at the Wilson Center, Cape Fear Community College in Wilmington. This concert will be conducted by guest conductor Pablo Ruiz Brosetta. The featured soloist will be pianist Ingrid Fleiter. Now, the program on this performance will include the following. The North Carolina Symphony comes onto the stage to perform the Piano Concerto No. 2 in F minor, Opus 21 by Frédéric Chopin. And this one will feature pianist Ingrid Fleiter. Then, following the intermission, the symphony returns to the stage to perform the Symphony in Three Movements by Igor Stravinsky. And that will be followed by Symphony No. 35 in D major, Kerschel Listing 385, the Hafner Symphony by Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. Now I'll begin our reading of the program notes. First, some information about our guest conductor. Pablo Ruiz Brosetta is associate conductor of the Seattle Symphony and music director of the Jove Orchestra de la Generalitat Valenciana. During the 2018-19 season, he leads the Seattle Symphony in concerts including Brooks Violin Concerto with Itzhak Perlman and Beethoven's Ninth Symphony. Last season, he conducted a benefit concert featuring Macklemore and Ryan Lewis and Ciara, a festival of Prokofiev concertos, and an all-Russian program with pianist Beatrice Rana. As guest conductor, Ruiz Brosetta's current season includes debuts with the Detroit Symphony Orchestra, Omaha Symphony, and Orlando Philharmonic Orchestra, as well as return engagements with the Houston Symphony and the North Carolina Symphony. He previously led the North Carolina Symphony in a program celebrating French music at Summerfest in 2017. Recent highlights include performances with Orchestra de Valencia, WDR Kern, Orchestra Sinfonico do Porto Casa da Musica, and the Kitchener-Waterloo Symphony. Ruiz Brosetta became known to a wider international audience following the opening concert of the Musica Festival 2014 in Strasbourg, where the young Spanish conductor led a joint performance of the SWR Symphony Orchestra and the Ensemble Moderne. Next, our pianist guest, Ingrid Fleiter. Argentine pianist Fleiter was presented in the 2006 Gilmour Artist Award, the only woman to have received this honor. She divides her time between North America and Europe. Fleiter made her American orchestral debut with the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra just days after the announcement of her Gilmour Award. Since then, she has appeared with the Cleveland Orchestra, San Francisco Symphony, National Symphony Orchestra, and many others, as well as at summer festivals and in recital. She has also performed in Amsterdam, London, Berlin, Frankfurt, Salzburg, Cologne, Helsinki, Israel, Hong Kong, and Tokyo. Recent international engagements include appearances with the Royal Stockholm Philharmonic and the BBC Proms in London. Recent and upcoming highlights include her debut with the Boston Symphony Orchestra, re-engagements with the symphony orchestras of Toronto, Dallas, St. Louis, and Vancouver, a tour of Spain with the Royal Scottish National Orchestra, and a fifth tour to Australia. She performed Mendelssohn's Piano Concerto No. 1 with the North Carolina Symphony in 2013. Born in Buenos Aires in 1973, Fleiter began playing public recitals at the age of 11 and made her professional orchestra debut at the age of 16. The concert begins with the North Carolina Symphony's performance of the Piano Concerto No. 2 in F minor, Opus 21, by Frédéric Chopin. Chopin was born March 1st in 1810 in Zelazowa Wola, Poland, and he died October 17th, 1849, in Paris. This work was composed in 1829 and 30, and the first performance was March 17th, 1830, in Warsaw, with the composer as the soloist. Now here is the overview. Chopin's chosen medium was the piano as a solo instrument. In his late teens, he tried to combine the piano with the orchestra, creating, in addition to the two piano concertos, the Variations Opus 2, Fantasia Opus 13, Concert Rondo Opus 14, and the Grand Polonaise Opus 22. But he was uncomfortable with the medium, and after age 20, he never again wrote for a large ensemble. In all these works, the orchestral scoring is so light that during the 19th century, it was fashionable to reorchestrate and improve it. Be that as it may, Chopin probably intended the orchestra to serve as a delicate background for the soloist, especially since he himself was known to have had a rather light touch. Heavy orchestration would have drowned him out. The F minor concerto, although listed as number 2, was the first composed but the second to be published. As was so often the case with composers in the Romantic era, the inspiration for the concerto came as a response to unrequited love. The object of his ardor was a voice student at the Warsaw Conservatory. But by the time the concerto was published, 6 years later, he had long forgotten her and dedicated it instead to his pupil, Countess Delphine Potocko, a gifted singer and close friend. The concerto was received enthusiastically at the premiere, but Chopin had his doubts as to whether the audience actually understood it. And this is a quote: "The first allegro received indeed the reward of a bravo, but I believe this was given because the public wished to show that it understands and knows how to appreciate serious music. There are people enough in all countries who like to assume the air of connoisseurs," unquote. Now here's what to listen for. Chopin was gifted and innovative in his use of harmony and phrase structure. The concerto capitalizes on all the qualities that were to catapult him to fame in Paris. It opens in a gruff mood, followed by a more lyrical second theme introduced by the solo oboe. When the piano enters in a standard double exposition, it inserts its own second theme before taking up the oboe theme. In a major departure from true development as understood by Beethoven, Chopin's music never argues. Rather, his development could be described as a commentary on the themes and on what had gone on before. His customary tendency is to embellish and decorate the piano line. The slow movement is intense and lyrical, with the ornamentation of the main theme gradually becoming an integral part of it. With its seemingly endless fluid lines, elaborate ornamentation, and recitative-type passages, this movement has led scholars to compare Chopin with the contemporaneous Italian bel canto style of opera composer Vincenzo Bellini, whom Chopin greatly admired. The finale is a rondo in which the third episode is in the rhythm of a mazurka. The mazurka became one of Chopin's signature rhythms, an expression of his nationalistic feeling. It originated as a Polish folk dance in triple meter from the Mazovia district near Warsaw. The instrumentation for this work is as follows: for solo piano, two flutes, two oboes, two clarinets, two bassoons, two horns, two trumpets, bass trombone, timpani, and strings. Following the intermission, the North Carolina Symphony returns to the stage to perform the Symphony in Three Movements by Igor Stravinsky. Stravinsky was born June 17, 1882, in Lomonosov, Russia, and he died April 6, 1971, in New York City. This work was composed between 1942 and 1945, and the first performance was January 24, 1946, by the New York Philharmonic. It was conducted by the composer himself. Now, here is the overview. Commissioned by the New York Philharmonic, the Symphony in Three Movements had probably the longest gestation of any Igor Stravinsky's works. He began it in April 1942 and worked on it in fits and starts until August 1945. There is an austerity, even violence, particularly in the outer movements, that suggests the larger world events around which Stravinsky composed the symphony. Given the composer's tendency over his lifetime to discuss his own music, it is natural to want to hear, in his own words, something about the background of his works. But Stravinsky was an off-the-cuff self-commentator, his remarks more readily reflecting his mood at the time of the interview than at the time of the composition. He originally said that the symphony was written under the impression of world events. I will not say that it expressed my feelings about them, but only that they excited my musical imagination. On a later occasion, he added some specific and detailed impressions that supposedly influenced the music, but that sound too much like explanations after the fact. He also added that the symphony is not programmatic. Composers combine notes, that's all. Well, according to Robert Kraft, whose extensive published conversations with the composer during the 1960s have driven scholars into veritable minefields of misinformation, Stravinsky claimed that the first movement was inspired by a war film, this time of scorched earth tactics in China. Now, here's what to listen for. The symphony is replete with Stravinsky's signature rhythmic complexity. It opens with a brutal fanfare, followed by a series of themes that have more of a rhythmic than melodic profile. The middle part of the first movement, however, is more thinly scored, with solos for violin, oboe, and flute, before a return to the opening violence. According to the composer's friends, the first movement was envisaged originally as a symphonic work with solo piano, although not a true concerto, and the piano still plays a major role in the movement. Many years after the fact, Stravinsky admitted that the second movement originated from the suggestion from his neighbor, the novelist Franz Werfel, that he composed the music for the film made of Werfel's novel, The Song of Bernadette. Like all of the composer's movie projects, this one came to naught as Hollywood opted for blander and sweeter music. It may explain, however, the prominent role of the flute and harp in this movement, as well as the fact that the emotional tone hardly suggests world events of the early 1940s. The second movement opens with a simple melody for solo flute, accompanied by harp and pizzicato lower strings. There follows a series of subtle changes in mood, all of them featuring solo flute and solo oboe, before a return to a variation on the opening melody. A short interlude leads directly to the finale. The finale opens with a heavy, strident fanfare that the composer later explained as his reaction to newsreels and documentaries of goose-stepping Nazi soldiers. And this is a quote, "The square march beat, the brass band instrumentation, the grotesque crescendo on the tuba. These are all related to those abhorrent pictures. The march leads to a static fugue in which the piano and harp have a prominent voice. The symphony concludes with an extensive, fast coda." The instrumentation for this work is as follows. For piccolo, two flutes, two oboes, three clarinets, bass clarinet, two bassoons, contrabassoon, 4 horns, 3 trumpets, 3 trombones, tuba, timpani, percussion, harp, piano, and strings. And the final work on this concert by the North Carolina Symphony is the Symphony No. 35 in D Major, Kirschel Listing 385, better known as the Haffner Symphony by Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. Mozart was born January 27, 1756 in Salzburg, and he died December 5, 1791 in Vienna. This work was composed in 1782. The first performance was March 23, 1783, at the Vienna Burgtheater, conducted by the composer. Now here is the overview. In 1771, Mozart was hired by the orchestra of the new Archbishop of Salzburg, Hieronymus Colloredo, beginning a running war between the two that lasted nearly a decade. Colloredo valued the exceptional talents of the Mozarts, both father and son, but was domineering and controlling. Wolfgang bridled under Colloredo's rigid rule, escaping Salzburg whenever he could to tour Europe, openly but unsuccessfully seeking a better job. In 1776, Mozart received a commission from the family of Salzburg's former mayor, Sigmund Haffner, for a large serenade to be played at his daughter's wedding, known today as the Haffner Serenade, which was Kirschel Listing 250. The family was pleased, and in the summer of 1782, a year after Mozart finally moved to Vienna to seek his fortune as one of Europe's first freelance musicians, they commissioned a similar work to celebrate Haffner's elevation to the aristocracy. Busy with his own wedding and the staging of his opera, The Abduction of Seraglio, Mozart dragged his feet, but finally, after his father's constant nagging, sent the Haffners a new work. Half a year later, while planning for a series of concerts in Vienna, Mozart asked his father to return the manuscript. He removed the opening and closing marches and the repeat of the first movement's exposition, rewrote the minuet, and added flutes and clarinets to the outer movements, repackaging it as Symphony No. 35. Destined to become a perennial favorite, the symphony was likewise a great success at the sold-out concert of its premiere. Even the emperor applauded heartily, giving the young composer a gift of 25 ducats, although Mozart, ever in a financial pinch, had hoped for more. Well, here's what to listen for. One of the attractions of this symphony is its sheer beauty of melody and lucidity of construction. The opening movement dispenses with the customary slow introduction, launching right into a statement, response, theme. The first phrase is brash and angular. The second is subdued. The famous Haffner theme reappears in ingenious transformations. It dominates the entire movement despite the brief appearance of the contrasting second theme and a closing theme. The andante is in the typical ternary ABA form that reigned for slow movements, although with variations from the Baroque through the 19th century. Mozart creates a particularly long multi-section theme and provides an only mildly contrasting middle B section. His repeat of the A section contains no variation, probably because he felt that the melodic grace and complexity of the theme did not call for gilding the lily. One of the distinctions between Mozart and Haydn is that the former nearly always wrote elegant, courtly minuets, while the latter made his sound like country dances. In this symphony, however, Mozart musters the full orchestra for a heavy minuet. The trio for strings alone is more graceful. In the brief finale, a hybrid rondo sonata form complete with 2 contrasting themes, Mozart pulls a few surprises with some asymmetrical phrasing, unusual key modulations and a coda that takes off sounding as if it might be a new development. With the exception of the andante, the symphony capitalizes on contrasting dynamics, which, with its Haydn-esque minuet, strongly suggests the influence of the older composer. This work, Symphony No. 35, was designed for two flutes, two oboes, two clarinets, two bassoons, two horns, two trumpets, timpani, and strings. These program notes were written and copyrighted in 2019 by Elizabeth and Joseph Kahn. You've been listening to Program Notes for your North Carolina Symphony, an exclusive production of the Triangle Radio Reading Service. I'll be reading all of the program notes from the classical music series of the North Carolina Symphony for the remainder of the 2019 season. This program is available on demand as a podcast on the day before each concert series and will be available for the remainder of the concert season. I'm George Douglas. Thank you so much for joining me today. We sincerely hope that listening to Symphony Notes will enhance your enjoyment of your North Carolina Symphony. Goodbye until next time.